Welcome to Planting Pinellas, the podcast that digs deep into the heart of gardening in Pinellas County, presented by Master Gardener volunteers of the University of Florida Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences. I'm Charlotte Vaughn.
I'm Alan Shapiro. Whether you're a local looking to connect with your community or a visitor curious about your area's culture, conservation, and all things green, this is the place for you.
Join us as we explore the people, places, projects, and of course, plants that make Pinellas a thriving hub of sustainability, innovation, and natural beauty. From gardening tips to environmental initiatives, we've got the roots of Pinellas covered. So grab your gardening gloves and let's get started. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Planting Pinellas. We have a special guest with us here today. Melissa West is here from the Extension office. Melissa, tell us a little bit about your role there and just kind of what you do and all things Florida Friendly.
Thanks for having me on. So I work for the Florida Friendly Landscaping Program, and I am the Public Education Outreach Coordinator. And what I do for our program is I do a lot of the classes that we teach to the public, and we cover the 9 principles. I also work with homeowners that have high water use. I go out and I do irrigation evaluations. So that keeps me pretty busy. We do have a couple different awards, just wrapping one up with Tampa Bay Water, who we also work with. We're just finishing up the WaterWise Awards, so that's for anyone that is using water wisely in their landscape. They can apply, and then we come check it out. So keep an ear and eye out for that next year if it's something that interests you, and then you can see who's our winner for this year that should be announced soon.
And we talked about that earlier in the year. Wasn't it June or July when the deadline hit and to be able to apply for that? So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll definitely bring that up again next year when it opens up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having
me. So the reason that we wanted you here today is because you have a really strong background on our principle for today, which is principle number 7, recycling in your yard. So there's a lot that goes into that. Alan, what is that principle?
Reading the principle, it's a reuse your yard waste to save money and enrich your soil. So landscape maintenance activities like mowing, pruning, raking generate yard waste that you can compost or mulch, recycling valuable nutrients. It's easy to recycle yard waste. So that is the principle. And I think one of the things that in researching this particular episode, for me, it all goes back to the other principles. And we've talked about these principles, and please listen on our other podcasts. But it all goes back to the right plan at the right place, the first principle.
Yeah, absolutely. We were looking at this resource that IFES provides about the 9 principles, and we were all kind of surprised of how much time it spent talking about pruning. And I noticed there's this one little inset that it says, reduce your pruning load. And that's really where it comes out and starts. Keep your pruning chores to a minimum by selecting slower growing plants or placing the plants far enough away from your walkways, driveways, buildings, whatever, so that they can grow without needing that constant pruning and maybe letting them be a little bit more soft and natural instead of that very formal shaped structure. If you want one or two that you maintain more, that's fine. But for your whole landscape, maybe just picking a plant that doesn't need that much attention saves you time, saves you money, and saves waste in your landscape. But before we kind of get into the next part of that principle, I was really thinking about recycling as a big picture, because there's a lot that could go into that just when you're considering, how can I be more efficient in my garden? How can I create less plastic waste, especially? That's a big one for me. And I read a quote this week. It says, when we reuse and repurpose in the garden, we learn that abundance doesn't come from excess, but from creativity. So it's so cool to think about creative ways that you can use things. If you have reclaimed brick or block from like a building structure that has been removed and you're able to make your raised beds out of that, or maybe set up an edging, and you want to be careful that it's not something that has contaminating chemicals in it or on it. But if it's a basic material that even logs, even some types of wood that you're able to use in your garden, that you can repurpose them and save them from going into the landfill.
You know, I in researching for this particular episode, I found this PDF article from Baker County Extension that was really, really interesting. It was very detailed.
It was extensive, for
sure. It was extensive about recycling in the garden. And I think that's what you're talking about. I mean, milk jugs and making sure that it's free of contamination. But there's a lot that you can do with it. And I know you've done a lot of things like that. And I guess, Melissa, have you seen homeowners that you go out to, that you talk to? Have you seen anything kind of unique that they've done to recycle these kinds of materials?
One thing I think about a lot is more for our rain barrels. We repurpose our rain barrels for our rain barrel program. They've already, you know, lived their life. They're food grade. They're cleaned up a whole bunch. And then we're able to put a spick in it, and people can use them in their landscape for collecting rainwater.
So, and that's like those big blue and white liquid transit containers.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. That's a great way to reduce a lot of plastic from, you know, not being reused. And it's perfectly safe to use on your plants. That's a great way. And I was thinking, when you were talking about all the different bricks and things, if you come look at my garden, there was so many random pieces of stone and brick and things when I moved in that all of my borders, none of them match. They're all just a bunch of mishmash.
No,
and it saves you so much money. And like you said, it's better for the environment. It's not going to the landfill. I think it gives it a little bit of character, too. It makes it a little more interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And we all know when we go to a garden center or, you know, a local plant grower, that there's a lot of plastic containers that are used. And many of the big box stores will actually take those back in the garden centers. Not everybody knows that. But if you buy a bunch of annuals or something, and you have all those little plastic pots, you can actually take them back to the store and they will recirculate them, or they'll recycle them in a way that, again, diverts it from the landfills.
That's interesting. Kind of, I didn't know that. And so why don't they make that people more aware of that?
That's our job.
That's our job. That would be great.
I've seen signage once or twice, but it could be better presented.
Yeah.
It's definitely good to know. And even if some of the smaller centers don't know about it or don't do it, that you might be able to find a resource online. And we'll put some links in the show notes as usual. But recycling water was another thing that we kind of talked about, how collecting water as rainwater, that you're able to use that in different ways in your landscape. Reclaimed water itself, if it's available to you, is a way that, again, you're helping be a little bit more eco-friendly, and you're reducing your need for fertilizers, because that reclaimed water is kind of rich in nutrients as well. We'll put that in the show notes too. So the big thing that the Florida Friendly Landscaping Principle number seven really focused on was composting. And there's different ways that we can get into composting, but that's where we really want to spend most of our time here today, is what is it? What does it do? Why would you want to? How do you do it? Tell us, Melissa. Help us out.
That's a lot
of
questions.
Give us the answer. You have the answer.
I have lots of answers. Basically, compost is just decomposed organic matter. It breaks down and you can reuse it in the landscape. It's going to add more nutrients back. There's all kinds of benefits that come to composting. It can improve soil structure, aeration, the texture, the water holding capacity of soils. It can also help reduce your need for fertilizer. I could go on all day about composting.
That's why we're here. So let me ask you, again, we know it's wonderful, right? Mm-hmm. And we know it can reduce a lot of waste, especially kitchen material, because I think that's one of the main things that a lot of our listeners would say, well, wait a minute, what do I have to do to get started with this? How do I get started?
I would say composting is not difficult to get started. There's definitely a few things I think you want to keep in mind when you do start the process, where you're going to put it, if you're going to use a container or not, because there is a method called pile method, which is open. I would suggest, if you're new to composting, I would use the closed container system. It really helps with moisture content, with your temperature. It does keep any unwanted wildlife from possibly coming to your pile. Also helps keep down any possible odors, which you or your neighbors don't want to smell. But I think it could be very easy. There's just a few things you want to keep in mind, which we can delve
into. So how do you choose a location? Like, let's start just from the ground up.
Perfect. So really, you want to make sure you have a level spot. That's okay. Where we want to start, a nice level spot. And we also want to make sure that it's well drained. We are going to add some water at some point to our compost, but we don't want it to constantly be sitting in a puddle. If possible, you may want to keep it a little closer to your house because you will be bringing those greens out to it. So you don't want to be going to the back nine trying to bring all that stuff. But mainly, you want to have a spot that is flat and not in a puddle.
Now, does it matter if it's in sun or shade? I know our full sun is very hot here.
So it can make a difference. There is an optimal temperature that you're going to want to keep your compost at, about 125 degrees Fahrenheit. That's when everything's really working in there and breaking everything down. So the sun could add to the process, but it could overheat. There is a thing as overheating. If possible, I would try to maybe put in a spot that has like a part shade. So you're getting a little bit of sun because it can help with the process. Because you do want the internal temperature pretty high.
Yeah, because a lot of us have maybe an area that gets sun just in the morning or just in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Maybe picking one of those spots that gets a good amount of sun, but not all day long.
That would
be
ideal.
A good start.
Yes.
Now, you don't have to have a thermometer in there that's going to be measuring this. Because you said it was 120 degrees.
125.
125 is the best optimal. So if it gets hotter than that, is that a problem? If it gets cooler than that, is that going to be a problem for the compost? Will the material break down quicker or less?
So you don't have to have a thermometer. They do make this really neat one that shows you.
Really?
It has the different stages of the compost at the different degrees. So it'll show you as it's actively breaking down at, according to what temperature it's at. They're pretty cheap and you can get them at most of the big box stores, but it's not required. Depending on your temperature will maybe cause the breakdown to be a little bit faster or a little bit slower. It's not an exact science. I don't say you have to be out there with your thermometer and taking it every day. I don't ever use a thermometer. I'm going to be honest. I don't ever use a thermometer in mine. It's more of a, this is happening. And when it happens,
it's either working or not.
Yes. So it's not like baking. We don't have to be precise. Like it's more of a natural thing. You kind of watch it and it happens.
Now I'll just throw in kind of a side question because I know that there's been a little bit more publicity recently about the vermicomposting where you use different kinds of worms to help break down. Is that something that maybe could be more versatile in the temperature range? Would it be cooler spots or warmer spots, or does it matter?
So when it comes to worm composting, you're definitely going to need it to be cooler because we got our little friends in there doing their job. The neat thing about worm composting, if you're open to it, you can bring it inside.
Oh, wow.
So if you wanted something on a smaller level, if like maybe you're in an apartment or a condo or something, that is something that you could possibly do. It doesn't have to necessarily have a big spot outside.
But it's like a sealed container, so you're not worried about them escaping.
Correct. Yes, they're not getting out of there.
Okay.
This is something we've talked about in our previous episodes about people that are at an apartment and have a balcony or something, and they really want to do something to help. So this would be a way to do that?
Yeah, you could totally do that. You would get compost from it, and a lot of people are really into the worm tea that comes from it. I don't have a whole bunch of experience with it.
Did you say worm tea?
Yes, it's not for you to drink. It's for the plants to drink. So don't.
Oh, okay.
You don't drink it.
That's what I was thinking.
It's kind of like a liquid fertilizer.
Yes, exactly. Okay. That's a big interest right now. But it does take up smaller space. And speaking of smaller space, they have started creating countertop composters. I don't think they're cheap yet, but they work really fast.
That's the one where it just grinds it and dehydrates. It's not pretty much composting, but it's still beneficial.
So there's a mechanical piece to it.
They're not cheap.
No, they're not cheap. But if you have the means and you're in a small space and you kind of want to make some use of your leftovers that you're not using, you know, your greens and stuff.
One other option that I've heard of as well is there are some local services that they will provide you with a bucket or a bin that you fill up and they come on a subscription service and they pick it up from your house, and then you can get the compost back from them as a member of that service to use once it's been processed. So that's kind of a cool feature as
well.
What
do they pick up from your house?
Your vegetable waste.
They pick up your scraps? Yeah. Really?
Yeah, so they give you a container, just like your recycling with your trash service gives you a container to collect it. And it's a sealed container so that, again, you're not dealing with pests and smells, but they will come and collect it, and then you fill it again, and they come and take it again, and then you can get compost from them. And I think just the general public can buy compost from many of those organizations as well without even having to join it.
I believe so. And I'm glad to hear that this is becoming more of a popular thing. I went to Portland about 10 years ago, and part of their trash system, they had recycling, they had their normal trash pickup, and then they actually, the city itself picked up your composting with everything else. So it's really cool to hear that we're starting to kind of make that change here.
Yeah, I've seen that on the West Coast.
Is that something in our county that we have?
So it's more of a private organization through the county.
It's not something that trash dealers.
No. Yeah, not yet, but hopefully, maybe one day. Maybe
I like that. Not yet.
Not yet, exactly.
But I do know that some municipalities, we lived on Indian Rocks Beach a number of years ago, and they would have like once a week where they would come and pick up your yard waste.
Largo does that all.
If you want. We live in unincorporated right now, and they don't. So that's something, I guess, that is also useful, at least in getting rid of your yard waste, if you're not going to compost it yourself, right? So that would be something that the municipality would be able to do for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a lot of that is, I think, the bigger stuff, or if you maybe are collecting leaves in our wonderful, cool autumns that we don't get here, you know, you can bag that waste and they'll come and pick it up on a separate collection. But even with stuff like that, and maybe I'm taking a little rabbit trail here, but we're good at that.
Yes, so we are.
We have some other options, even before we continue in the composting thought, that we could maybe use that scraps and waste from our landscaping in our yard in other ways. And I'm thinking about where if you have a container garden, a raised garden kind of thing, that you can put some of those twigs and limbs and even leaves in the bottom of your container, and it will settle and break down over time, but that's what it's supposed to do, and then you just kind of replenish it. You can do, there's something that's kind of interesting to me, but I haven't tried it. They call it hugelkultur. Have you heard of that?
Have heard, but I'm not well-versed on
it. Yeah, you're basically like creating a mound on your dirt, and you use the bigger stuff in the middle, and it takes longer to break down. So you might have a couple of logs from a tree that you had to trim, and then you put some of the twigs around it, and then some of the leaf litter and grass, you know, clippings, and then eventually your already processed compost or other soil that you're planting into the sides of that mound. And it creates this kind of a raised bed gardening system without needing any container at all, but it's also reusing those scraps. And we talked in the habitat one about using brush piles and even wattle fences and things that you could use, sticks and twigs that are beneficial to not just your own landscape, but to the critters that are friendly there. So, you know, all of those things. But kind of circling back, when we have our compost location, we have a container of some kind, we want it to be fully sealed, or we want it to have some drainage holes, or how do we choose a container?
That's another great question. There's all kinds of options when it's coming to pick your container. There's some that load from the top. There's some that load from the front. There's some that are on a roll and you can roll it. So you're really going to want to think about, once again, where we're putting it, what your ability is to move things. Some drainage holes is definitely a good thing. Because we are going to add some moisture at times, but we don't want it too wet. I also noticed this is where my little smaller insect friends come up into my compost, because they do work. We rely a lot on the microbes, but we also rely a lot on our insects a little bit further into the decomp.
So you are going to see some creepy crawlies when you open this up.
At some point, yes, but that's okay. Like, they're supposed to be there. We want them there. Don't be alarmed. Don't try to get rid of them. We want them there.
We talked about that, and again, in previous, going back to all the principles, how they all relate.
Yes.
And we talked about that in our previous episode on pests, as we call them. But
these are actually
beneficial.
Right.
These are beneficial. Yes. And that's what's important.
Yeah, you'll definitely see some worms, maybe some beetles, millipedes. There, all kinds of stuff could be in there. And it's a good sign. Like, you want to see that in there. So,
You mentioned microbes. Is that something that just happens, or do you enhance that some way? Is there something that you need to add or do to stimulate those microbes to work?
So those will occur naturally if we give them the things that they want.
What kind of things?
So just like us, they like food.
Okay.
They like water. The different temperatures are going to have an effect on our microbes, how they're working inside of our compost pile and breaking things down. And then moisture. I know I've talked a couple times now mm-hmm. about adding water to the pile. So that's definitely one as well.
So in talking about water, what comes to my mind is our rainy season. And you mentioned how you could have it in a bin or open. So if it is open, how do you, with our rainy season and too much water, I would assume is going to reduce the number of microbes and it's going to take longer for the material to break down. Is there something that homeowners can do to kind of make sure that it's not too much moisture, especially during our rainy season?
So if we're going to have an open pile, if we're going to do that method, it goes back to making sure we're not going to be in a space that holds a lot of water. We want something with well drainage.
Right.
That way, if it does get rained on, it's going to, you know, go back into the soil. It's not just going to sit there. You could also use maybe a tarp over the top if you're concerned with excess water. And then one of the troubleshooting tips that we talk about, if you have too much water, whether it be an open pile or a closed container, is adding more of our browns. Those are going to be the bigger, woodier pieces, like twigs and straw and wood chips, those kinds of things. That helps suck up some of that moisture.
Now, is that where you might even put in some paper bags or some scraps of newspaper or cardboard or something?
Oh, you could totally do that, yeah.
So that would count as a brown material. Mm-hmm. So what other materials do we need along with the brown material?
So we definitely need the brown material. That's where you're going to get your carbon-based. And that is going to be the drier, woodier, like we talked about. In addition to that, we're going to need we call them our greens. Those are more nitrogen-based. And these are the things we usually think about when we're talking about composting. People think about their kitchen scraps.
Yeah.
They automatically think that. This is where most of our greens are going to come from. So we're going to have our vegetables, our fruits, and that kind of stuff. And they do have a much higher water content in them. So as we're adding them to the pile, we kind of want typically a 2-to-1 carbon to nitrogen. We want more carbon than we do want nitrogen just because.
So that's more brown, less
more
green.
More brown, less green. Okay. Just because there is so much water in the greens.
Okay.
And speaking of the greens, they can be our source of odor. If there ever is a possible odor problem with your compost, that's usually what's causing it. So we usually suggest taking those greens and burying them either in towards the middle of the pile, or if you have some leaves, kind of cover that over the top. And it kind of helps with some of that smell.
So you're kind of doing a lasagna, that every time that you add some green,
yes,
then you're going to cover it up with that brown and just keep going.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay. That's a great analogy. I like that.
That's perfect. Yes.
Stole it from somebody. Sorry.
Well, I thought it was yours. So you talked about what we should add. Is there things that we should avoid putting into the compost?
Yes. We definitely want to avoid any meat products or dairy, things that have oils in them, like mayonnaise, that kind of stuff, just because they get in there and they rot. They're not adding any benefits to what we need going on in there. There are other processes that do take meat, but that's a whole other thing, and we're not talking about that today.
That's not like the backyard version.
No. So, yeah, we just want to stick to some of our produce from our kitchen and then things that we find in our landscape.
Well, what if I was maybe making a salsa and I have all these seeds from peppers, is it okay to put those into my compost pile?
That is a good question. I have put plenty of seeds in mine. Usually we're getting to that temperature that we're killing anything from growing inside. Every once in a while, I will see something on the outside of the compost that's possibly growing. It doesn't usually make it out of the pile, but I will see a little someone, you know, poking up here and there. Not usually a big deal, especially as we're turning the pile. It's going to move all that stuff to the middle where the hot section is to kill everything.
Yeah. And actually, I've had things volunteer in my compost in the past, and I was like, hey, free plant.
Yeah, Crowd really. I mean, it's probably rooted very well.
Yeah.
And it's doing very well. Take it out, and now you have a repurpose of it.
Sure. Speaking of, because things can grow in there, we want to make sure we're not putting any invasives in there because just in case our seeds aren't being killed, something could grow, or we could possibly put a new seed out when we put the compost out.
And we've kind of talked about that, where you want to actually package that in something so that it doesn't even spread in the trash system, that you want to tie that up and put it in your trash, or even burn it, or, something, whatever you're comfortable to do, just to make sure that it is very dead before it continues.
Because this particular principle is about landscape maintenance, which means that if you put the right plant in the right place, the amount of maintenance that you're going to have to do is going to be less. Yes, in the beginning, you're going to have to make sure to get the plant established, and maybe use some fertilizer at the right time. But again, the composting piece of it, which is this part of the principle, goes back into that. So you're reusing the materials in a way that's going to benefit your whole garden. So I know where you're coming from, Melissa, and I get what you're saying. And then I think it's right what you said. It's like, it's the whole package. It's hard. I don't know that we can go directly and say this principle to this principle, but putting them all together,
they work.
Yeah. And that's what makes it, that's why it's called Florida Friendly, so that we can have a, not maintenance free, but maintenance
efficient.
Efficient. That's a better term. Type of landscape. So, and we've talked about this in our previous episodes, that gardening should be fun. It shouldn't be a maintenance. It should be fun. And if you do it right, and if you follow these principles, it's going to work.
Yeah, it's a lot more enjoyable when you're working with your local environment instead of against it. Then there's a lot less of the chores that you have to do, and more of just the fun part that you can enjoy. We didn't really talk about what to do with the compost. Can you explain, how do you know when it's ready? How do you know where to put it? What kind of plants would benefit from having that compost? Can you plant completely in compost, or do you want to mix it with something else when it's done? What do we do with it?
Okay. So once we have gotten through our decomposition, and we're breaking down, you're going to notice that everything has kind of formed into a nice, dark, rich, soil-looking substance. That's when we know it's, pretty much ready to go. What I usually suggest is, before you do use it, you can buy a screen, you can make a screen, and kind of screen it out. You can take any of the bigger pieces that are still left in there, and you can put that into your next compost pile.
And by screen, that's basically sifting.
Sifting, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Not like window screening, more like a
hardware
teak.
Cloth or something.
I always think of like shark's teeth at the beach. Like, you know, you got maybe the little plastic thing. Like a kid, when you're a kid and you have the beach tools and stuff. I don't know. That's what it makes me think of. I've seen where people have used wood and like the chicken wire even.
Okay. Is chicken wire too big, or would that
work? There are smaller holes.
Smaller ones.
Okay. Yeah, not the big octagon-shaped ones.
So like less than an inch or less than a half inch?
I'd say less than an inch. You can have larger pieces in your landscape. It's not going
to And you're just anything. Trying to get rid of the larger pieces.
Yes.
I mean, if there's some larger pieces left in the compost,
it's not going to hurt
it. It's not going to hurt anything.
No. So we just take those leftovers, and then we can put it into our next pile to finish breaking down. And then you can just use it around your landscape, pretty much in any of your landscape beds. You can actually mix it with other mediums and create a potting mix if you want to use it in a pot instead of using it in the landscape. That's an option as well.
Would that be mixed with other kinds of soil or additives like vermiculite?
So something like that. You can use sand, peat, perlite, those kinds of things.
And a Florida-friendly alternative to peat would be the coconut coir, right?
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
So those would be some good options to use it if you don't want to use it around the landscape.
Okay. What about coffee grounds? We kind of didn't get into that.
You could totally use coffee grounds. You can use your filters if you
want
to.
I was just going to ask about the filters, so you really don't have to separate those.
No, I don't drink coffee anymore. But when I did, we used to get the bleached filters,
yeah.
So they're more of the brown color. You can use the bleached ones, but I just felt better myself using those. But you can just throw the whole thing in there. You can also use tea bags. I usually suggest taking out the little staple, so we don't have staples in the
makes sense
in our compost. But you could totally use that. While we're on the topic, there's other weird things you can throw there.
Ooh.
You can put nail clippings in there.
What? Fingernails?
Yes. You can put
okay
your vacuum cleaner contents within reason, don't be sucking up Legos and throwing it in there.
Pet hair and stuff.
Yes, you can totally use pet hair in there. Junk.
Does it add nutrients, though?
It adds something. It's okay.
Okay. I'm just... I've actually heard
people say dryer lint.
Yes, that was another one I was going to say. You can totally use that.
Interesting.
You can use your junk mail, but not the shiny ones. You don't want it because, you know, sometimes they're a little shiny. But the ones that are more like newspaper, you could totally put that in there. So there's all kinds of stuff you can put in there.
That is so cool.
So in terms of the maintenance of a compost pile, you mentioned something about turning it over.
Yes.
That's something that you would have to do. How often would you have to do that? And I guess my other question then would be approximately how long does it have to sit before you actually get compost? And is there and I'm sorry for a third question involved in all of this, but is there a way, do you separate, you know, what you're doing in terms of the compost so that you know which one is kind of working, or is it just all together?
First question was?
The turning over.
Okay.
So maintenance.
Maintenance portion. Okay.
Yeah.
So I always joke when I teach this to classes is when we talk about troubleshooting, when in doubt, turn the pile.
Okay.
Because that's one of the things. We go back, if there's too much moisture, turn the pile. If it's too hot, too cold, turn the pile. So we're turning the pile a fair amount. Is there a set schedule of turning our pile, like every 2 days? Not necessarily. A lot of it is kind of eyeballing and just kind of seeing what's going on in there. But turning the pile is very important.
But what does that mean?
So depending on how you have your barrel set up, most people, you know, if we have it in a bin, you're going to need a pitchfork or a shovel or something, and we're just going to get in there and pretend it's like a salad, and we're just going to toss it all around. If you have an open pile, once again, same thing, just, you know, bigger space. Some even come on a tumbler system.
That's what I was going to ask about, because I've seen some these days that have a tumbler. It's much easier, and it's on a stand, and you just...
I have one. It doesn't have a crank on it, but... it's on a stand, and it does have the days of the week, so you can keep track of the last time that you've turned it. I don't take stuff out every day. I usually take it out every couple days, and then I turn then, and that seems to be okay. So like every 2 to 3 days. And then, like I said, if you're watching it and something seems to be wrong, we want to turn the pile.
Well, I'm going to interrupt here just a second, because how do you handle your stuff inside if you're not taking it out right away? Because a lot of times I just have a few things at a time and I don't want to go all the way out while I'm fixing dinner and then cleaning up. I wait until, and I have a little container, but what are some ways to keep it safe inside of your house before you carry it out?
So there are some different options. They do make all kinds of different bins that can sit on your counter if you're okay with it sitting out. They do have tops on it, so you shouldn't have problems with bugs or, you know, smells as long as you're emptying it every couple days. A good thing I just learned, too, is you can take a piece of newspaper to line it. So you can kind of just pull it up and toss it into your compost instead of lining it with a plastic bag, because then we're going back to using more plastic.
I actually use a compostable bag that it's made of vegetable starch.
Those are great.
So you can't leave that on the counter for long because it will break down that fast.
Can you buy those at local stores?
I've gotten mine online, I've seen them in a few local stores as well.
So
if they sell the bin,
they
might sell the bag.
But you can also take like a jar or whatever, and if you're not going out, you can just, you know, put it back in your fridge.
So you would keep it in the fridge or you would keep it on the counter, or does it matter?
It doesn't really matter. If you're more concerned with there possibly being a smell.
I think it's
or
your
bugs.
Tolerance level.
Yes.
This is what came to my mind, Charlotte. We talked about our tolerance of our partners.
Sure, yeah.
and what the tolerance level is there. And my partner, I can tell you, the tolerance level of having something on the counter would not work.
Well, see, I have a magic compost bin because I fill it up and then it just mysteriously is emptied and cleaned every couple of days.
I need one of those.
Because my spouse does not like it to get sit there, so he'll take it out and dump it in the compost for me.
So my second question was, again, was how long? So once you've turned it over, you've maintained it, approximately how long? And then again, what goes along with that is if you're continually adding to the compost, then I would assume that it's breaking down over time, so some of it may not be broken down. So then what would you be using? Would you take some of it out and then reusing it?
Okay. So as far as how long it takes, this can vary. It can be a couple months up to a year. It all kind of depends how much you're working the barrel, the temperature, what you're putting in there. There are different factors that are going to work into it. So it's going to vary. Like we came back to saying, you know, you'll know once it's that darker soil looking, you'll know it's ready then. But as far as adding to it and using it, a lot of times what people like to do is have two piles going. So yeah, we have one that's active that we're continuing to put stuff into, and then right, one that's already been finished and is ready to actually use in the landscape.
Yeah, and as you finish that one up, then
you can start it over again.
Yeah, you start over, and it just kind of cycles back and forth. Mm-hmm. Or I've even seen people that had three bins.
Yeah.
And so they've got one that is stored, finished, one that is almost done, and maybe they screen some of the stuff out, and then one that they're adding to, and then they just rotate it along the way. To wrap up our episode, we always talk about our Ready, Set, Grow. So there are some things that we need to be doing at this time of year that are maintenance, that are helping our gardens be ready for the upcoming seasons. And we do actually have what can be called a cool season in Florida, where it's just not as hot. It's not really cold, but you know, it's not as hot. So there are some things that we can do at this time of year that we can't necessarily do it in the summertime. But to prepare for that, we need to maintain what we've already got. So there are pest pressure things that we need to look for. Plumeria rust is a big thing at this time of year. Frangipani, plumeria, whichever name you use, watch for that and make sure if you have an infected plant, as it drops its leaves this time of year, pick those up and don't compost them. You want to dispose of those away from, and don't like recycle that fungus or bacteria that might be on diseased plant matter.
So even though you said though the compost could kill it, it's probably not a good idea. Is that what you're?
It wouldn't be smart if you know that you have
an infected
plant right, to put it on a clean plant in the spring. That it's just not worth it at that point, that you're not getting enough benefit from composting that one little thing that you could have just left that out. So watching for things like that. If you do have a turf lawn that you want to be watching for weeds at this time of year, maybe using a pre-emergent weed control if that's your thing. If it's not, then that's fine.
And then October 1st.
We can first.
Fertilizer comes back, so we can fertilize.
So that kind of goes into the set. So what we're doing to get ourselves ready for this season that we're getting into, go ahead and check with your soil test and make sure that your palms have the nutrients that they need. They do have some specific needs, and you may have to have that test to be able to get certain types of fertilizer. Your lawn, your other plants and shrubs that you can fertilize it now, just be sure that it's not about to have a big rain event, because then that would be wasteful for one thing, and it would be potentially contaminating through runoff into a water source.
It's interesting on the Ask IFAS site on this, it talks about oleanders. So why specifically oleanders?
So it's the oleander bug that we need to be looking for.
Okay.
So this time of year, watching for that so that it's not damaging your plants, and just monitoring for bugs in general is definitely part of our seasonal maintenance.
And go back and listen to our last episode.
Yeah, and pests, I should say, not just bugs, because most bugs, most insects are beneficials, and it's just the pests that we want to try to manage. And then what are we going to grow this year? What are we going to grow in October, Alan?
Well, it's, again, still warm. We still have some days that are humid, but you could start planting for cooler months. Impatience is one of those. What else could we plant?
Yeah, so we've got even things like strawberries, the begonias. Those pretty much we can plant just about any time of year. They are such a versatile plant for our climate.
And any herbs this time of year? I can see dill, fennel, parsley, cilantro.
Yeah,
but cilantro can also be during the summer, right?
But it bolts too fast here.
Okay.
So even a slow bolting variety, if you plant it in the summer here, it's going to tend to flower and set seed, and then the leaves are not going to have that flavor that you want for cooking. So it really is better to plant those things at this time of year when we're starting to cool down, along with things like brassicas and even some of our summer fruits and vegetables, okra and cucumbers. you can continue to plant them now and they'll go through as much of the season as they can. And I'll just throw in this little geek moment because we haven't geeked out yet today too much. Maybe we have to some people, but I watched a podcast recently about what they call Persephone days, which is the days where your temperature dips below a certain number of sunlight hours. And so if it's below 10 hours of sunlight, then that affects your plants in a different way. And you need to be aware of your seed to harvest date based on your Persephone days. Well, our shortest day of the year is December 21st here in most of North America. And in Pinellas County, Florida, we do not have a day that is less than 10 hours of sunlight. So we actually don't get Persephone days. So it's kind of irrelevant to throw it in here. But that was so cool.
But that's very relevant.
Yeah, because right now you want to be sensitive to how long is this going to take from when I plant it either as a seed or as a plant start until I'm ready to collect a harvest from that and make sure that it's not going to be too cold for the plant by the time that that harvest would come out. So there's things that we might be able to plant from sprouts right now or from an established plant that it's too late to plant from seed. Most of the stuff here, we can keep on planting it. And even things like beets and broccoli, different kinds of brassicas, eggplants, peppers. I mentioned strawberries, but I love my strawberries. So, you know, definitely this is a great time of year to get your strawberry beds ready and get your plant sets in if you haven't kept them going year round already. It's such a great time. This is really go time for us for all kinds of plants, flowers, edible things, herbs. We're good to grow right now.
So I want to thank Melissa for coming on to our episode and giving us all this great information on this Principle 7 on recycling, really on composting and how to get that started. So we really appreciate you being
here.
Thank
you so much.
And thanks specifically to Tampa Bay Water for funding your role and for allowing you to share your knowledge with our community. And again, I like to throw in the Barbara Strickland Foundation endowment because that's what makes all of this possible. So you guys are what make it possible as well. Liking, subscribing, following, sharing all of the good things. Just get the word out because we want this information to be beneficial to our community. And so we need more people to hear about it. So please keep sharing and keep listening and keep growing in Pinellas.
Thanks for tuning into Planting Pinellas. We hope you're feeling inspired to get involved, learn more, and grow alongside this incredible community.
Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if you like the show, leave us 5 stars or a review. And don't forget to share with fellow plant lovers. Until next time, keep planting, keep growing, and keep making Pinellas County a place to thrive.
This podcast is brought to you by the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Extension in Pinellas County, Florida, an equal opportunity institution.